Chapter 1. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but Elliot hadn't thought of the consequences. He wanted to save his friends. He knew he could lead the Fomers away from the plane, and that he could make his way back to the safety of his aunt's farmhouse. His plan would have worked, too, if not for the arrival of the transport plane, the veritable wrench thrown into the works. When the Canadian Army M-35 cargo truck motored away from the runway at Prince George Airport, it drew the army of undead Fomers away from the Global Express, which held Elliot's close friends and father inside. He'd spent every moment with these people since the crisis started, and he wasn't about to let harm come to them, not if he could help it. Which is why he did what he did. Using sight and sound to attract the Fomers, Elliot led them away from the Global Express, the plane's engine still whining in a steady drone. The sound of the truck's engine didn't interest the Fomers as much as the fire Elliot had started, the gunshots, or his voice. He put a good distance between the Express and the Fomers that chased him, but when he looked in his rearview mirror to check on their position, he noted that the Fomers had stopped. They whirled around in circles and stared into the night sky. Elliot honked the horn several times without result, before jumping from the truck. He dared not fire any more rounds from the AR-15 he carried or from his Red Hawk. He didn't have an endless supply of ammo with him. He needed to save it all until it was necessary. "Come on, you bastards!" he yelled, without any response. A moment later, Elliot discovered what had hold of the Fomer's attention. "It's a plane! Another damn plane!" he said out loud. He looked at the end of the runway, the opposite end from where the Express sat, and at about 3 o'clock he saw the powerful beams from the headlights of a much larger plane coming into land. As it came closer, it got louder. "Man, that's a big-ass plane!" Elliot wondered if his friends could hear it from inside the cabin, and if there was enough room for it to land. He looked across the field to the Fomers, then back to the plane. Even if the area were clear, he doubted he would have time to get back before the other plane landed. The headlights of the incoming jet lit up the top end of the runway, and Elliot realized his friends inside the Express would now be aware of its presence. The noise and lights from the aircraft, along with the movement of the Global Express on the tarmac as it taxied off the main runway, had the Fomers running in all directions. One group ran for the top of the runway, and the others ran toward the Global Express. Thousands of Fomers littered the runways the transport came in for a touchdown. Chapter 2. One of Richard Holmes's hand-picked guards rushed from the cockpit and roused his employer from sleep. The guard knew his job. Inform Holmes first, and not involve Etheridge unless it was absolutely necessary.
What?
Holmes sputtered.
Sir, the pilot wants to see you. Says it's important,
the guard said after a cursory look around. Holmes nodded to his aide, then got out of his seat and headed to the cockpit, but not before he looked over at Etheridge. The combination of whiskey and sleeping tablets had done its job.
What is it?
Holmes asked the crew as he entered the cockpit.
Mr. Holmes, we've got a visual on the landing strip at Prince George and...
And what's wrong with that? Did you have something of importance to pass on to me?
The pilot and co-pilot exchanged looks.
Well, what is it?
Holmes demanded.
This runway isn't long enough for this plane, but in an emergency, I can put it down. What has complicated matters further is that there appears to be another plane on the runway, and the only light we have down there is a line of flames running the length of the landing strip on one side.
What? How can this be?
The co-pilot, who surveyed the scene below with binoculars, interrupted.
Sir, look, the other plane is moving.
The pilot picked up his binoculars and saw the strobe lights activated on the plane that moments ago sat motionless on the tarmac. He breathed a sigh of relief as he watched the plane taxi to one side of the runway.
We should have the room now.
The co-pilot did his best to reassure Holmes.
What the hell is happening?
The pilot sounded alarmed.
What is it?
There are people on the runway. Well, I think they're people.
What do you mean, you think? Give me that.
Holmes lurched forward, snatched the binoculars from the pilot, and looked down. He immediately understood the pilot's indecisiveness.
Land! Land on top of them if you have to, but land!
I can't do that, they'll...
Holmes pulled a 9mm pistol and placed the muzzle on the pilot's forehead.
We don't have time for a discussion. Land the plane. I have others back there who'll do as I say without question, and I'd rather not waste this bullet. But you decide.
The pilot showed no further interest in challenging his orders. Holmes went aft and briefly evaluated the men in military fatigues.
I hope these soldier boys have enough ammo,
he thought, as he approached the commanding officer of this mercenary unit.
Get your men ready, Colonel Rummett. We're about to land, and we have a runway full of hostiles.
Yes, sir.
The colonel stood and answered.
We'll be ready, sir.
Chapter 3. The pilot of the Express got the plane off the tarmac and now had it at a right angle to the runway. Everyone on board could see the runway, the foamers, and the headlights of the incoming plane.
Man, it's gonna come down on top of them! Alan cried out.
That's what it looks like, son,
Riley said in the dark. They kept the lights inside the cabin off. Besides, they could see better.
Where's Elliot? Where is he?
A dazed Cindy called from the dark.
Easy, Cindy, easy.
Chuck tried to calm her. Not easy to do when he couldn't see her.
Look, the foamers aren't chasing him anymore, if that's any consolation. He should be okay now.
Really?
Yes, Cindy. Look for yourself.
Chuck caught a flash of Cindy's profile as she moved ungainly toward the window. She looked to see where Elliot was, as did James. Chuck felt a tug on his arm and turned to face the silhouette of Riley.
We need to talk,
the once Twin Falls cop said.
Okay, what do we got?
Chuck followed Riley back to the small galley on the express. With a small overhead light on, Chuck could see the faces of the former president, Tom Transky, and two Secret Service agents.
Let's make this brief,
Riley said against the background noise of jet engines adding to the intensity.
We have very little ammunition with us, so we can't fight the foamers. We have no idea at this stage who might be on this plane, and we can't afford to risk our lives to help them. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, okay. But what's with this secret meeting?
Chuck said.
I've come to know you pretty well, cowboy, and you're the type to try to rescue whoever's on this plane from the foamers, single-handedly. Well, it's not about to happen, understand?
Chuck rocked his head back with a silent laugh. In their short time together, he and Riley had developed a strong camaraderie between them.
Then our plan is? Tom asked.
Well, if I may be so bold as to add my humble opinion, the former president said.
Of course you may, but make it quick, if you can,
Riley added.
Thank you,
Bob began.
First, they have to land the plane. Second, we have to hope they're not so stupid as to get off the plane. Third, we need to establish communications with them. Planes have radios, do they not?
Damn good question. Everyone had been so concerned with Elliot's escape, the approaching plane, and getting their plane off the runway, that no one had thought to check with the pilot to see if there had been any contact with the other plane.
Someone should go to the cockpit and find out. No point in all of us going. We'll likely do ourselves an injury in this dark,
Riley suggested.
Okay, I'll go. You?
Tom Transky interrupted.
No, Chuck, you're needed here. I'll go. You probably won't fit inside the cockpit anyway.
Tom switched off the light before pulling the galley curtain back and making his way toward the cockpit. The others went back to the windows to watch the incoming plane.
Damn, there are more foamers on the runway now,
Riley commented.
Do you really think they'll try to land?
James Goodwin called from the dark.
Maybe they don't have a choice. They might be out of fuel,
Bob said. This man, who Chuck still thought of as the president, might be a politician, but already had shown he was prepared to risk his life for others. Others he knew about as well as Moses. And he had a pragmatic outlook on the situation. Chuck didn't know at this stage what the president would be doing out here. There would be time for that later. But he could see the president would be more of a bonus to them than a hindrance. He thought the same of the pilots, the Secret Service agents, and Tom Transky. It was their families he wasn't all that thrilled about. That meant more to move, more to watch, more to feed, and more to worry about. A bigger group would be harder to conceal, and they had to move in daylight. There was no choice.
"Here they come!" James yelled.
The headlights of the C-17 illuminated the runway as thousands of foamers ran or stumbled their way toward the incoming plane. Tom Transky came back from the cockpit as the big bird was about to land.
"The pilot hasn't been able to make any contact with the other—"
"Oh my God! Sandy, get away from the window! Don't look! Don't—"
Chuck warned too late. Chapter 4. The red overhead light flashed several times, and the crew of the C-17 Globemaster transport braced themselves for an emergency landing. It would be far from smooth.
"Emergency landing! Emergency landing!"
a crewman yelled.
"Fasten your seatbelts!"
Holmes burst into the cockpit.
"What's the damned prob—"
His chin dropped when he looked to the runway below, now visible in the Globemaster's lights and only feet away. The nose of the C-17 dropped appreciably. He could see the mass of foamers below.
"On the floor! Get on the floor!"
the co-pilot yelled. The last thing Holmes saw before he dove forward were the thousands of red-eyed beasts swarming underneath the heavy transport. The C-17 was built to land in some rugged conditions. On top of thousands of former humans wasn't one of them.